Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.
Jim Potts back on the air, and as always, thank you so much for tuning in. I do appreciate it, you spending your Sunday evening with me, or your late afternoon, whatever the case may be. So thank you for tuning in, as always. Hey, before we get started, just as a reminder, anybody wants to call in some of the topics we're going to be talking about today, or quite frankly, any question on any of these different subject areas that we've discussed on the air here, please feel free to do so. The number is 818-602-4929, okay? Or you can always email at me, as so many people do it, listenup@potsandassociates.com. And if you want to get on our email blog blast about the upcoming shows, a number of people have been signing up, so that's a good thing. Just text Potts Associates and text that to 22828 and enter your email address. Again, text Potts Associates and text that to 22828. Enter your email address, and hey, you'll get the upcoming show topics, okay? Okay, before we get started, I want to send a shout-out. Tomorrow's Veterans Day, everybody, so the first thing I want to say is congratulations to all of those veterans out there. And I hope if you have a veteran in your family, or whether you do or you don't, you know a veteran, whether it's a family member or not, you know, thank them for their service. I know we get a lot of, inquiries about this, these kind of things with the veterans and everything. A lot of news coverage about veterans. There's a lot of organizations out there that are doing a lot for them, including disabled veterans. They need our support when they come back home. Some of them have issues, some of the issues are mental issues, some of the issues are physical disabilities. But they're all out there trying, and I think that's spectacular. So tomorrow, once again, is, in fact, Veterans Day. So let's acknowledge a veteran, even if you have to go out of your way to find one, just to say thanks for your service. The realities are, hey, we live a very nice lifestyle here in so many respects. I know some of the things that we talk about on the air have to do with, some serious issues. But we've got these guys and ladies that are all around the world trying to protect our interests and everything. So, again, shout out to any veterans that you know. And to the family members, same thing, obviously. I know that they'll be doing that as well. Okay. Today we're going to be talking about 25 physical security tips for employees. All right, so these going directly to the workplace today on those. But before we get started on that, I want to talk about the two areas that we didn't have a chance to finish up on last week. And one of those is the state-by-state laws that have to do with parents being held legally responsible for their children. If you remember a few shows back, we actually did the survey, and it was about the responsibility of parents. And then somebody wrote to me before the last show and said, are there any states that are, in fact, legally holding people? We just did a survey on whether or not they should. So I actually did some research on that and got some information. So we'll be talking about that today as well. And then the last one I want to finish up on is the mission of Homeland Security, because I got a topic request on that as well. You can understand what Homeland Security is all about, but I have more of an in-depth look at that in terms of the two missions that they have. So I'll share some of that with you today as well. Okay, let's move on to the emails. You know, I always like doing a few emails before we get started. So let's get going. Let's get busy. Jim, I heard a brief news piece that the United States Secret Service has done a report on school violence. I didn't know that the Secret Service got involved in these things. Could you shed some light on this? Excuse me. Well, that was signed by Lance from Detroit. Well, Lance, let me tell you something. The Secret Service actually gets involved in a number of areas. Normally, we think about the Secret Service. We are thinking about the protection of the presidents, congressmen, you know, et cetera, some of the politicians. But let me tell you, they, in fact, did do a study about protecting American schools, and they did an analysis based upon school violence, which actually identified 41 incidents of attacks against kindergarten through 12th grade schools in the United States. And the study was approximately a 10-year study. And the researchers through the Secret Service National Threat Assessment Center examined the background and behaviors of the attackers and identified a series of key findings and significant commonalities. Now, the Secret Service will tell you in a heartbeat that they're keeping the schools, you know, what it takes to keep the schools safe is going to be a team effort. And we have to understand that the director of the service of the United States Secret Service says that they have a commitment to continue to support the nation's schools and communities. So that's good. Now, I will tell you what their findings were, okay? Rather than go through the whole report, I'm just going to tell you what some of their key findings were. First of all, there's no profile of a student attacker. Now, that's important. They're telling you that there's no consistency with that, nor is there a profile for the type of school that has been targeted. So what they're also telling us is that that's all across the board. Next, attackers usually had multiple motives, the most common involving a grievance with classmates. Now, that one, of course, that's easy for us to see that one. That gets out there in the news, and they're talking about these different things with bullying, things of that nature, or some of them are failed relationships. Somebody liked somebody. Somebody else didn't like somebody. Somebody started dating somebody. Somebody else got upset about that. So we're talking multiple motives. All right, but most of it, most of the time, has to do with a grievance with classmates. So for those of you that are in the education area or have kids in school, we need to reach out to them and let them know that if they do have a problem, please let you know. As a parent, you do want to know. Next one. Most attackers use firearms, and firearms were most often acquired. Are you ready for this one? This should not surprise you. Acquired at the home. Once again, parents not securing their weapons. They're getting these guns. They're getting them at home. All right. Now, that should be pretty obvious, quite frankly, because when you think about it, these kids are not going to be able to get these guns in, you know, in a local purchase from a store. So you know they're getting them from the homes. So parents, you got to make sure that you secure your weapons. All right. Next one. Most attackers had experienced psychological, behavioral, or developmental symptoms. So then there we go again. Are the parents paying attention? Are the school teachers paying attention? All right. Now, next one. Half of the attackers had interest in violent topics like the Columbine shooting or Hitler, if you're ready for that one. So once again, are parents paying attention to the signals from these kids? Same thing as far as I'm concerned with the teachers. Are teachers paying attention to this? Are classmates paying attention to this? All right. You know, on the air last year, I believe it was, we talked about these school shootings and why kids kill, and we addressed some of these issues like this. And one of the biggest things that we talked about was the fact that people don't pay attention to the signs, and these kids always tell somebody, and people don't do things about it. Next one, all attackers experience social stressors involving their relationships with peers and or romantic partners. I kind of mentioned that a little while ago as well. Next one, nearly every attacker experienced, okay, now, here you go, negative home life factors. Now, again, this was a 10-year study. It has to do with 41 schools, all right? So nearly every attacker experienced negative home life factors. Next one, most attackers were victims of bullying, which was often observed by others. All right. Now, we know about the bullying aspect of it because the media, anytime this happens, always wants to say it has to do with bullying. And then, you know, you've heard me say it on the year before. They never come back, you know, afterwards. That's what I like about this report. The report was very good. I'm giving you the thumbnail sketch of it. OK, but the report was very good because normally they don't come back, you know, and deliver a report on each incident as it happens, and the media doesn't give us that. And bullying is a word that everybody can relate to, so they leave it like that. Next one. Most attackers had a history of school disciplinary action, and many had prior contact with who? Law enforcement. Law enforcement. Now, again, that's not every situation, but they're talking about, based on their report and their study, they said many of them had contact with law enforcement. So now, once again, do we go back to the home life situation? Do we look at the parents again with these situations and see what kind of parental guidance? And look, I'm not going to say that there aren't parents out there that are doing their best and that have tried everything and these things still happen. I get that. And the last one, all attackers exhibited concerning behaviors. Most elicited concern from others, and most communicated their intent to attack. How many times have you heard me say that one? All right? It's just that people aren't listening. All right? And as a result of that, these kids end up doing it. Now, if somebody would listen and talk to these kids, maybe they wouldn't do it. For some of them, maybe those are attention gathers. I don't know. But there it is. This was a 10-year report. It was by the United States Secret Service, specifically on school attacks. All right? So, and let me tell you something. These attacks were all over the country. All right? All over the country. So it's hard to pin down any particular point, but I will say that the only a few of the states that probably have never had one, from what I can see, would be Oklahoma, Kansas hasn't had one, North Dakota, Wyoming, Montana, Idaho, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama. So there's some states out there, Maine, Vermont, and even New York, you know, my home state. Minnesota hasn't had any. Anyway, just to give you a few ideas about that as well, okay? But this was all contained in that report. It was an excellent report as far as I'm concerned. But there you go, Lance. All right? Okay. Jim, we live in Chicago. And a couple of months ago, a man drove his SUV into the Chicagoland Mall. His attorney is arguing that the man is not a terrorist because he did not specifically target anyone. Is that a requirement for a terrorist act? That sounds ridiculous. What is your opinion? Beth from Chicago. Beth, I agree with you. That is ridiculous. But look, this is an individual that's being represented. The attorney's going to have to represent him to the best of his ability. The reason why he wants to take it out of a terrorist format is because of the fact that the punishment is much more severe. He thinks they're over the top with the punishment. All right? So, no, I don't agree with that argument because, Beth, I'll tell you something else. In order for it to be terrorism, they don't have to, per se, target a person, all right, or target people, all right? It's not like they have a name and they're looking for a particular person. That, to me, is not going to be a terrorist act. That's going to be something else. But now, I've talked about malls, and this guy drove his SUV through the mall. Fortunately, nobody got hurt. But because he planned this event, he went online, I think they discovered, 120 times. Okay, so he planned the event out in terms of what he wanted to do. Now, in my opinion, he didn't plan it very well. He ended up not hurting anybody, thank goodness. But, and he also wedged his vehicle in between two of those concrete, you know, columns that they have at these malls, and that's how he ended up getting caught. It was actually two off-duty police officers. They yanked him out of there. But fortunately, nobody got hurt. Now, of course, there were a lot of people in a panic mode when the word went out that there was a terrorist active shooter situation going on. And even though there was no shooting, the sounding of the glass, I guess, sounded to people like gunshots or something going on. And you know how people are when they start calling 911. It's everything. You know, the world's coming to an end. So glad he didn't hurt anybody. But what he did do was create over $110,000 worth of damage. And in his case, because of the amount of damage, even that nobody got hurt, because it was over $100,000, which is actually $110,000 in damage. So because of that damage alone, he's looking at 20 years to life. That's why his attorney wants to not call it a terrorist act. Now, I will tell you this. I'm willing to bet you dollars to donuts that they determine the dollar amount at $110,000. So if you notice, that's right over the threshold of $100,000. I would not be surprised if they didn't pump up the numbers because of what he did in order to put him into a higher category. Now, that's what I think. That's what's going to happen. There's probably going to be a plea bargain situation that's going to take it from a situation that it comes under $110,000, whatever the case may be, and he's not going to be looking at 20 years to life. That's my opinion. That's what I think is going to happen. Plea bargaining happens all the time. Okay? All right, Beth. There you go. Yes, I think it's a ridiculous argument, but hey, his attorney's probably doing the best he could. Jim, I'm a vet and believe that the canine that that helped bring down al-Baghdadi should get a Purple Heart. She played a significant role and got wounded. Curious as to your opinion. Lance doesn't say where he's from. Just Lance. Well, Lance, I got to tell you something honestly. No, I don't think that the canine involved should get a Purple Heart. I think those have to be reserved. Now, they could create some kind of other award, in my opinion, but to give a Purple Heart out, I think that's a whole different ball game. Excuse the expression, an animal, okay? The bottom line is I think there should be a special award, and I think there are special awards for dogs for heroism, but the Purple Heart's going a little bit too far. We want to keep the integrity of that award, in my opinion, and not the emotional part about what the canine did under those circumstances. Now, I will tell you, and I don't know if you heard this, but the Pentagon has now come out also and said no, that the dog involved will not be getting a Purple Heart, that those are basically reserved for, you know, I want to put it in terms of a human being, basically, and that's the way it's going to be. And the Pentagon has ultimate decision-making powers there, basically. Okay? All right. If anybody's got a difference of opinion, I'm willing to hear it. I got no problem with that. 818-602-4929. Should the canine get it? Nah, not in my opinion. Okay. Let's pick up from where I left off last week. I didn't have a chance to get to it, but it's, you know, this business about Homeland Security and what their missions are, et cetera, because I think there's a lot of flack that's being given in that direction. Let's put it that way. And this person that wrote to me asked to be able to cover this topic, and that's what I want to do. But I want to make it clear, you know, all is not lost when we talk about all this terrorism thing. I know that some of it sounds so horrible sometimes. But look, we've got agencies out there. I just told you about this, you know, United States Selective Service. And, yes, that has to do with schools, but trust me, they do other things. But there's two missions for Homeland Security, all right? The first one is prevent terrorism and enhance security. Now, look, preventing terrorism, that is the cornerstone of Homeland Security. And I can tell you that within that mission, they focused on the goals of preventing terrorist attacks, preventing and protecting against unauthorized acquisition or use of chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear materials and capabilities. And as a result of them doing that, guys, that reduces the risk to the nation's most critical infrastructure, because that's what's important to us. Some of these places will take out infrastructure, all right? And that's problematic. It also is designed to protect key leaders and also key events as well. That's the purpose. Now, they work to improve the overall departmental unity effort, all right, across the board. They partner up with other organizations to identify, investigate, and interdict threats as early as possible. They do that by focusing on countering violent extremism and preventing complex mass casualty attacks. They also try to reduce vulnerabilities by denying resources and targets, and they also uncover patterns and faint signals through enhanced data integration and analysis. See, that's the intelligence team out there working, guys. All right? Now, they also work with several federal departments and agencies, including the Department of State, the Department of Justice and Defense, and the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, as well as state, local, tribal, and territorial and private sector partners. Now, let me tell you about tribal, because people may not understand. They say tribal? Yeah, well, remember something. We have Native Americans, all right, that are out there. The Native Americans have reservations or lands that they own and things of that nature. So they are to be as protected, you know, as the rest of the nation. So just to let you know, they're even working with the tribal communities as well, which I thought, quite frankly, was pretty interesting. Now, let me just tell you. They have the joint operational plans, guys. So they have an enhanced budget, just to let you know, to invest in the processes of all of this. Now, let me tell you something. There's about four of the goals here. One is to prevent terrorist travel to the United States, into the United States, by enhancing information sharing and international cooperation and risk-based targeting, including, by the way, by focusing on foreign fighters as well. So that should not be a surprise to you. So when we talk about Homeland Security, we're not just talking about they're here and that's as far as they extend. They go outside of our borders as well, because their thought process is to strengthen aviation security as well by implementing risk-based mitigation strategies. So basically is what they're doing is making sure nobody's going to fly into us as well, fly over here again. So they look at all of that. The next one is what they attempt to do is prevent the hostile use of nuclear materials against, you know, the United States by deterring or preventing adversaries from smuggling nuclear weapons and materials and enhancing the ability to detect nuclear weapons and materials out of regulatory control. Now, you know about that part of it because our government, we've talked about some of these different nations like North Korea, as an example, in Iran, whereas what they're looking for is to determine whether or not they're enhancing, you know, their weapons to include nuclear weapons. That's critical. We cannot let places like Iran or North Korea, all right, get nuclear weapons. Now, to be honest with you, I'm not as concerned about North Korea. I think they're doing it just to bolster. But places like Iran, you know, those people, you know, to me, they've got a different mission, and we need to be very, very careful with that. So Homeland Security, believe it or not, reaches outside of our borders for those kind of things as well. They're not the only ones, of course. They work with other agencies, like I told you. Now, what you don't also think about on a day-by-day basis in terms of Homeland Security is that they also, look, seek to protect key leaders, facilities, and national special security events by deterring, minimizing, and responding to identified vulnerabilities and threats against the president, the vice president, and other protected politicians as well. So they're out there trying to do that. I'm not bringing up politics by that. I'm only telling you what the purpose of the agency is. That's critical, you know, as well. Because as we've seen, when you get rid of the leaders of a country, you know, there's always going to be somebody that's going to step up, but it creates a disorganization for the moment as well, as we found with al-Baghdadi when we got rid of the first and second person in command. But again, you know what they do. Somebody else steps up to the plate, basically. All right? Now, Homeland Security, you guys, you just got to understand that they're always going to remain vigilant on our behalf. Okay? That's critical. And I can tell you that although the United States government's counterterrorism has degraded the ability of al-Qaeda, senior leaderships in Afghanistan and Pakistan, look, they're still out there, all right? And it's what they're planning on doing is executing sophisticated external attacks as well. So, now, one other point that I want to make clear, though, we can talk about this, you know, in terms of these foreign nations, but they're also concerned, meaning Homeland Security, they're also concerned about the threat of domestic-based lone offenders. Well, you heard me talk about lone wolves. That's who they're talking about. And those who are inspired by violent extremist ideologies to radicalize and commit acts of terrorism against Americans and the nation. The problem is, as you've heard me say this, those are harder to detect. And Homeland Security acknowledges that as well. All right? So again, they're doing their best. And now, as you've heard me say, we've also got to be concerned, and they have to be concerned about ISIS, with new strategies moving forward. Now, I will tell you, one of the biggest issues that we are concerned about is how we're going to prevent and protect against the unauthorized acquisition or use of chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear materials and capabilities. Guys, that is a major problem. Okay, we've talked about this before. not so much I have talked about this. I'm talking about as a nation we've talked about this. But this business about these chemicals, you have no idea. If you just listen to the news sometimes, you'll hear about how some of these countries have used chemicals against their own people, which I don't understand that at all. But they do it. And we don't even want to think about that because the consequences of these types of attacks are potentially high, even though the likelihood, because I don't want to scare you, the likelihood, guys, of their occurrence is probably relatively low here. But that's on a major scale. But on a smaller scale, we've got to be careful because small-scale chemical attacks can be expected to remain out there, and it's because it's more likely that the relative lack of specialized skills and knowledge required to conduct such attacks fortunately works to our benefit. But they're so easy. You heard about what happened the other day on the news at the Buffalo Wings location. I forgot what state that was in. Here's one of the workers that goes into the maintenance closet and ends up mixing two chemicals together by accident or something, whatever it was, and he ends up killing himself. You know, the problem with that is that it's so easy that when you mix different chemicals together, it could be as easy as something like that. So we got to be careful. You know, it's too easy in this country to be able to get things that you can actually combine together and create these smaller attacks as well. You know, we always focus on gun control. We always focus on gun control, but there's so many other ways that it could happen. So the employee, I guess, let me correct something. I think that the employee was helping, and then it was an accidental type of situation because maybe somebody inexperienced wasn't doing something or something, mopping or whatever the case may be. But it's a freak accident, but that goes to show you how chemicals can be so deadly and how easily attainable it would be to get chemicals on a smaller basis in order to be able to do something, to make a long story short. Now, let me just tell you about their second mission, guys. This second mission, and this is one that always brings controversy, I get it, but their second mission is actually to secure and manage our borders, right? And again, I'm not getting into the politics of it. I'm only telling you what Homeland Security's mission is. From their perspective, they want to secure, they want a well-managed border to protect the United States against threats from abroad. And they have to also safeguard and expedite, think about this now, the flow of lawful trade and travel as well. So their job is not just looking for people coming here illegally. So please understand that. We're talking about people threatening us, okay? So we got to manage our borders. And I'm not necessarily talking about our southern border because we also border on Canada. So we're talking about that. I briefly mentioned that last week. But as a result of them trying to manage our borders, they also look to secure the United States air travel, okay, also by air and also by sea, all right? So they don't forget that one either. It's one that you don't really hear us talking about because we're always talking about coming up through Mexico. But their job is also to look out for issues coming by sea, coming by ship, all right? Now, they also want to safeguard and expedite lawful trade and travel, guys. So they're not trying to eliminate any of that, all right? Now, the third piece of this in terms of managing our borders is that they seek to disrupt and dismantle transnational criminal organizations and other illicit actors who are trying to get into this country to conduct other types of business that's illegal. So we're not just talking about terrorists. We're talking about criminal activity as well. So that's something for us to think about. So look, the Department of Homeland Security guys, they employ a large range of strategies to improve our border security. All right. And don't write to me about this wall. I'm not talking about that. You know, it's other things as well. All right. Because our economic security and public safety, that's what they're concerned about. You know, and they also want to make sure that our partners out there, they want to help them ensure them coming here through legal pathways as well, identifying and removing people and goods attempting to travel illegally. That's always going to be there, guys, no doubt about it. But more importantly, they want to ensure the safety and the pathways that make up the travel and trade system as well. Okay? So once again, they've got a tough job. It's all the way around. But that gives you roughly an idea about what Homeland Security's you know, job is. So for the person that wrote into me about that as the topic, thank you very much for the topic. And there's the information. Okay, let's move on. Let's talk about this parental responsibility laws in the United States, guys, because that's important. Now, to be honest with you, the survey was one thing, and discussing the parental actually responsibility laws was a whole different ballgame when I got into this by each state. So I was able to secure the information from each state, which I thought was very interesting. So there are some states, and I will tell you that the majority of these states hold parents liable, or even guardians. Don't forget guardians, by the way, or even guardians when the child causes intentional, willful, or malicious destruction to real estate or personal property. Parents can be held responsible for that. And it's something we don't normally think about. So, and that's when it's the child's willful or malicious damage. And by the way, we're talking under 18 years of age. All right, we're not talking above that. Now, I even saw one state, which was Arizona, where the parents can be held liable, if you're ready for this one, for theft or shoplifting. It's like shoplifting? Yeah, shoplifting. So a kid goes in there and steals, the parents can be held financially responsible for up to $10,000 in Arizona. And in addition to that, the issue about driving a motor vehicle. Now, we already know about the driving of motor vehicles and loaning your car to your kids. But whoever, if this kid engages in some type of negligence or willful misconduct with that motor vehicle, get this. Liability will be imputed to the person who signed the minor's application for a driver's license. So if you sign that application and that kid gets that driver's license, and they turn around and do something like I just told you, you could be held liable for up to $10,000, people. And that's Arizona, just to give you an idea. So, and I noticed a lot of the states had liabilities being imposed for this issue with kids, driver's license, and these vehicles. All right? So there's some other states that have some other things, which we're going to cover in a second. Let me give you an idea. If you're ready for this one, California. Again, a minor under 25 years of age. Listen to this. Well, you know what? Let me do this. Parents are held jointly and severally liable. That just means they're independent of each other or together. All right, so if one can't pay it, they both can pay it. That's what that means, joint and severally liable. Now listen to this. If the child harms a person or property while operating a motor vehicle with the parent's permission, that's one thing. Now, they can make the children liable, or the parents liable, rather, for even for graffiti. I think that's real cool, okay? Graffiti as well. Vandalism, okay? They can hold the parents liable for vandalism, $25,000. Up to 25 grand, all right? Up to 25 grand. And if the parents think that they'll have their insurance company pay that, uh-uh. California's saying that the insurer is not liable for more than $10,000 for conduct imputed to the parent. That means the parent's going to have to come out of pocket. They cannot just rely on their insurance policy to take care of it. And by the way, if that child gets into an accident, like an automobile accident, they're talking about holding them liable for the medical, dental, hospital cost, somewhere between $25,000 and $30,000, and per person $15,000 for bodily injuries, or $30,000 max per occurrence for bodily injuries, and $5,000 max for property damage. So think about that. Your child gets into an automobile accident, the parents in California can be held liable if they're under 18 years of age. And when I read that, I'm like, wow. I remember I gave my first my cars to my kids at the age, I think the first one got it at 16. I think they were both 16, actually, 16 years of age. And but I didn't even know about this at that time, quite frankly. But that's a lot of responsibility when we put these kids behind the wheel. I got to talk to my son. He just bought my granddaughter a car. So I got to talk to him about that and let him know that as well. And again, California does hold parents liable for shoplifting as well. So a number of states do that. Now, they also have what they call emancipated minors, guys. And a lot of people don't know what that means. And emancipated minor is one that's under the age of 18, but they're actually on their own and living on their own. You might say, well, who's that? Well, let me just tell you, some of these movie actors and things and these singers and people making money like that at a younger age, some of them can be emancipated minors, which means that they could be literally living by themselves, or because they're independent financially, the parents may not be responsible because they, quote unquote, emancipated. And in order for a child to become emancipated, they got to go into court. It's not just a big deal, and it's got to be cleared by the court. They just can't declare it because they run away from home or whatever the case may be. Okay? So the majority of these, you guys, have to do with graffiti, damage to property, whether it's personal property, real estate property, any of those they can be held responsible for. And that includes medical. So it's kind of across the board. Some of the states, it's as low as $1,000, $5,000, $30,000. And I can tell you this, you don't want to be in Hawaii, because in Hawaii, the parents' liability is unlimited. Unlimited. And in Hawaii, for any act that's considered tortious acts. Tortious acts are like assault, battery. You know, so that means they hit somebody, hit another child, or whatever the case may be. Any of those kind of things like that. Negligence from driving a car. Unlimited. Unlimited. Now, if the child is married, that's going to be different. But they're also talking about unmarried minor children as well. So they could get married under the age of 18. So they specifically state that in Hawaii, unmarried as well. So I thought this was very interesting. There are some serious penalties. Illinois is another one where if somebody has to sue based upon personal injury or damage, listen to this. $20,000 is the liability plus attorney fees. So if the person ends up suing you, you got to pay the attorney fees for the person bringing the action against the child and, of course, against you as a parent. So those numbers could be steep. I'm going to have to tell you that. All right. Now, one other thing about Illinois, you want to be careful. Illinois has $20,000 as actual damage. That's just for the first act. If there's a second act, or there's a pattern of practice of willful malicious acts by the minor, they will turn around and tack on court costs and attorney fees, and second go around, $30,000, not $20,000. All right? Now, the last one that I'll tell you about, the state of Maryland. State of Maryland, parents are liable for restitution for the minor's criminal acts. So any act that the minor engages in, the parents in Maryland could be, you know, exposed to up to $10,000 in liability. There was one more I wanted to tell you because I thought this was good. Nevada. Nevada, you guys, they have the ability to carry guns in Nevada. So let me just tell you something. In Nevada, all right, liability can be imposed on parents for a child's negligent or willful misuse of a firearm. So if a child has been adjudicated delinquent or convicted of a criminal offense and the parent knows of the child's propensity to commit violence acts and the parent knows that the child intends to use firearms or permits the child to use a firearm, end of story. You're talking unlimited liability, guys. Unlimited. So just to give you an idea about that. And if you remember earlier, I told you I haven't heard about any school shootings in Nevada. It might be the reason why parents are doing what they have to do. And they're taking these guns and they're putting these guns in a situation where they are, hopefully, they're securing them. Okay? Okay, the last topic we're going to cover today is the 25 physical security tips for employees. Now, these situations come up. People send me emails regarding the work environment, violence in the workplace, etc. There's always information out there about those kind of things. So look, here's the deal. there are things that are happening out there because the times are growing more complex and dangerous in terms of privacy, data use, and personal security. And quite frankly, it's become evident that physical security at the workplace must cover, in any work environment, multiple aspects such as protection of the employees, you know, protecting the office, the electronic systems and data from all kinds of different threats that are out there. And it's the things that we don't think about, but this is why we encourage some of our clients as an example, that you need to be looking a little bit closer at these things. And I would urge the listeners at their respective job places to talk to the powers that be. Now, these different tips, it's really intended to create a safe space for employees, all right? But it's also intended to protect the office assets, because anything that happens to the office assets can put the company at risk financially, and then what happens? Everybody's out of a job. So take a look at that. But I'll send these, I'm going to talk to you about these different areas right now. The first one, number one, is take care of your belongings. Now, the reason why we say that is because people steal. Employees steal. There's no doubt about it. You know, it's amazing. When we go out to do some of these active shooter trainings and we do these site assessments for employers and we interview people, I can't tell you how many of these people tell us that people steal lunches. I'm telling you that probably 65% of the places we go to where we interview employees, you know, to write the workplace security plan form and the procedures and protocols, during the interview process, we'll say people steal lunches, if you're ready for that one. So that's always amazing to us. I don't know why somebody wants to steal somebody else's lunch, but it is what it is, I guess. But look, taking care of your belongings, guys, also means hardware, paper copies containing important or sensitive information that may belong to you, and you have it at work, and people get that information, and they use it against you. And I'll tell you, it sounds simple enough, but it's easy to overlook such details where you can actually lose, you know, private information. And let me tell you something. Some of this loss of data is not just dangerous, it's also extremely inconvenient. So make sure when you're at work, you lock your things up safely before leaving for the day if you have to leave something there. Or if you go out for your lunch break, you may want to lock up before that as well. Okay? That's the first one. Take care of your personal belongings. Number two, participate actively in disaster management drills. Some people think, and safety procedures, some people think that's a waste of time. Look, going in there and explaining it one time is not good enough. So encourage your employers to be out there doing these drills. Think about it when you were in school and we always had, what, the fire drills as an example. So now schools are doing, what, fire drills, but now they're also doing active shooter drills, unfortunately. You know, workplaces don't think about that. They come in and they get the education, but they don't actually have drills where they turn around and say, okay, on this particular day, we're going to have a drill. Or, you know, planning it and you know, not planning it, but you turn around and you do the drill. Now, sometimes people can get hurt that way, so we always encourage them to at least give the date of the drill, the date and the time, that this is what we're going to do on this particular date, and this is how we're going to handle it. So, and don't think it's a waste of time, because that's another mistake. People think that that's a waste of time because they think it can never happen to me. Understand something. It can happen to you. Three, keep track of training workshops and courses offered by the company to keep you up to date with security practices at the workplace. All right, whether it's cybersecurity, physical security, if your company is not doing things like that, in my opinion, training workshops for this, I think you need to talk to them. Get some of the people together and put it in that suggestion box. If you think that you're going to have a problem with your employer by doing that, hey, send them an anonymous letter if need be, okay? But I think it's important to do that. Now, look, number four, and I'll send this out to the managers. If you're a manager out there, I'm telling you, it's advisable to discuss with other managers. You guys need to come up with a contingency plan, because managers and supervisors can actually be held liable, all right? They can actually be held liable for certain events that they're aware of and they do nothing, such as, you know, somebody that's that hit somebody, violence in the workplace, and now they don't do anything about it, and now that person hits somebody else. Now the employer can be sued for negligent retention and negligent supervision, as an example. So managers, if you're hearing me on that, just make sure that you take action under those circumstances. Five, you got to be able to protect yourself. All right, so you got to ask for You can ask for self-defense classes if you're ready for that, and even first aid trainings. You know, when we go in and we do our active shooter training, is what we do, we always ask, do you have CPR training? A lot of people don't have CPR training. But somebody in the work environment, the company should have people that could be trained in CPR. I don't know, do a half a dozen people, depending on the size of the company, where different people get training for CPR. So if there's an event that happens, at least you have what? You've got some people there that would be trained under those circumstances. All right? Now, number six, when you're moving out of an office, ensure that you carry your identification card or employee ID card with you. That helps to maintain tight security, guys. So if your company doesn't have that, they need to be thinking about that, where people are wearing clearly identified, you know, badges, etc. Seven, I'm going to come back to the managers on this one. If you work as a manager, it's your duty to ensure the employees are that you are supervising are trained adequately. And that's another problem. We see that all the time. They're not being trained professionally. Managers do try sometimes, but understand, once again, I say that you go out there and you get the professionals with some of this training, okay? Let's look at eight. Remember, and this is something we always, I tell you on the air about paying attention to your surroundings. You've got to remain alert at all times. Report any suspicious instances to upper management or supervisor, whatever the case may be, maybe even security personnel, all right, that somebody is trying to gain entry maybe onto the premises, whatever it may be, all right? So remain alert at all times. I'm not telling you to be paranoid. Just simply remain alert. Now, this next one, if you work late hours at the office when fewer people are around, try to have a fellow employee with you at all times, all right? If you're getting ready to head out to your car, head out to a break, whatever the case may be, carry something with you if need be. And I've talked about this on the show before. So as you know, all of the shows are archived. So if you have to go back, okay, and look at one of the other shows talking about, you know, especially for ladies as an example, there are defense techniques I've talked about in the past. All right? Okay. Next one. Large part of physical security is concerned with protection of employees from violence. Your company should have a policy against violence in the workplace. All right? 11. If you notice that any of your office equipment, such as hardware, drives, are missing, be sure to let the authorities know immediately. All right? Because we've already talked about the fact that people are out there stealing things from companies and then, you know, and then ransoming it back, charging them to get it back. 12, be very careful about divulging company information, you guys, to outsiders. Somebody from outside the company is asking you a lot of questions about your job. Hey, be very careful with that. 13, apart from diligently attending fire safety drills, familiarize yourself with emergency exits and routes, all right? So remember that one. You should always know where the exits are. 14, if you're in security, you work in security, it's important to recognize the threats that are posed by insiders in the office as well. Get some training on that, all right? I've talked about that on the show, the eight common signs of possible violent employees. 15, password protection, you should have it. Shouldn't even have to tell you that one. 16, disaster prevention and mitigation are sound measures to take in advance. Hey, look, I know I'm going kind of fast with this because the time is running out, but you know, if you can't, if you're not speed riders, you can always go back and listen to the show and get these. 17, to ensure that data is protected, remember to dispose of papers safely. Use those shredders. All right. 18, this might seem elementary to you guys, but remember to store backups. Your backup system, you should store backups. 19, when any important communication is sent out, make sure you discuss it with the people involved beforehand so to ensure there's no chance of it getting lost or misplaced. All right, that's critical. All right, 20, apart from backups, knowing how and where to keep those backups is also crucial. So keep your backup information someplace safe, fireproof safe, etc. 21, employees in charge of IT will want to make sure that there are strong firewalls in place. I shouldn't have to tell you that one. 22, IT employees should ensure that once an employee exits the organization, his or her email account and other database should be locked down. Physical security has many aspects, all right? So we also want to be careful of infectious diseases. You should have policies in place regarding illnesses as well. especially with infectious diseases. 24, as mentioned before, guys, sometimes threat to security comes from insiders of the organization. Look around you. Be aware. Don't share information with other people outside your department unless you're authorized to do so. And number 25, always safeguard the information of other employees if it comes into your area, okay? Don't be loose with it. All right. You've been listening to Jim Potts on LA Talk Radio, and it's time to close out the show. Be sure to join me next week. And if you like what you heard, do me a favor, spread the word. Hey, don't forget my book is on Amazon. It's been doing very well. Domestic Terrorism Safety Tips. It's priced low. I wanted people to be able to get it, and people are buying it. So look, spread the word if you like what you heard. Until then, you guys, be aware, be vigilant, be safe. More importantly, be a reluctant victim.
You're listening to Listen Up with Jim Potts, only on LA Talk Radio.